Welcome to our new PR Week podcast episode with Arvind Hickman.
Hello and welcome to the PR Show. I'm Arvind Hickman and today we are going to look at pitching and whether the pitching process is broken. Almost every agency leader we speak to at PR Week loves to moan about pitching. Just the other week at our PR 360 conference in Brighton, one agency boss described pitching as a shit show, and another said it was broken. It's a view that seems to be held by bosses at agencies of all shapes and sizes and others in the process, including some clients and new business consultants. To unpack pitching, I am joined by two agency bosses, James Herring from Taylor Herring and Mandy Sharp from Tin Man, and Snap's Director of International Communications, Tanya Ridd, who has also held senior comms roles at Apple and worked in agency side. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
Hi.
James, before we kick off proceedings, you had some pretty prickly views about pitching at PR 360. You were the guy who called it a shit show. And you also had a few choice words about procurement. Perhaps you can just elaborate for our listeners.
Oh, dear. Well, the procurement problem, and I apologise to anyone from procurement listening. It's really not every procurement department, but it's probably about 50%.
Okay, I'm glad we cleared that up.
It's about half of them, I think. And I think the problem with it is that, you know, PR is a creative business. We're not a commodity product. Mm. And the trouble is that there aren't that many specialists in procurement who procure creative services. And it's not an exaggeration to say that I have spoken to people in procurement who have just come off the phone trying to do a deal on photocopier paper or hand towels. And then you find yourself trying to have a discussion about what you do. And there's a lack of understanding. And I think that what has happened, the modern procurement way has made what has always been a very complicated and complex process far more complicated than it needs to be.
Okay. Well, we're going to touch a little bit more on procurement a bit later in the show. Before we sort of dive into the nuts and bolts of pitching, I kind of wanted to ask each of you, what is your one pitching horror story and how many pitches have you been involved in the past year? I'll start with you, Mandy.
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't tell you the number. Quite a few pitches over the last year.
Are we talking, what, 10, 20, 30? 100?
I would say 20, probably, pitches. Okay. Variety of horror stories. I think there is a general rule of horror stories, though. There's a theme that runs through all of them that end up being the ones that you talk about. Usually they're the ones where you've got a huge number of agencies pitching, that clients won't make time to brief you properly or meet you face-to-face or really talk about the problems that they've got or what they want the agencies to actually solve. They ask for big decks to be sent in on three pages in 3 days alongside a number of other agencies. And then when you finally do get to meet these people, you've never met them before, there's a lack of chemistry, you could be the last one of 10 that's met these, you know, the team, there's no energy. And so the list goes on. And it's just a kind of cacophony of
a perfect
issues.
Storm, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you, James? How many pitches has Taylor Herring been involved in the past year? And what's your horror story?
Well, I would say we're probably doing at least one or two a week.
Okay, that's quite a lot.
So we definitely do a lot of them. Horror stories, a couple of years ago, and I remember it well because it was about a week before Christmas, we got asked by a very big brand to pitch for their account. Mm-hmm. We got very overexcited about this. And the brief came, and it was a really tight turnaround. I think we had about 7 working days before Christmas, and the response was on the 3rd of January, something kind of, you know, you're at the end of the year and on your knees. But anyway, we were excited about going for it. So we did. The brief arrived, and with the brief was a note saying, you're invited in the day after tomorrow to come and meet our chief marketing officer, who is going to tell us all about his new vision for the brand, and you'll have an opportunity to ask any questions. So we thought, well, this is exciting. You don't normally get the CMO in the room. Must be taking it seriously. So we turned up at their HQ, and we were ushered into a boardroom. And in the boardroom, we met the 4 other agencies who'd all been asked to pitch, but we didn't realise that we were all in there in a group Q&A session. So
it's like a live audition.
Oh yeah, but so this guy basically presented his vision, showed the TV spot, and then it was like, any questions? And of course, it was just tumbleweed because nobody wanted to ask any questions because they're worried about showing their hand. Because of course, if you ask a question, you're potentially doing that with an interest to try and find a solution to the problem. So that, I think, was excruciating for all of us on the agency side, and certainly for the client as well. So I think just an oversight there in transparency.
Yeah, I mean, Tanya, I can't imagine you've been involved in too many pitches in the past year, or at least I should hope not.
Well, I mean, for me, it's not so much about just the UK because my brief is international. Mm. So I've probably been involved in about 5 or 6, okay, I would say, in the past year, but none in the UK, mostly new markets for us that we're expanding into. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, like horror stories, I can't say that there is a specific horror story. I do think sometimes, though, you start a pitch and you know quite quickly that there is, you know, a lack of connection. There's a lack of understanding, perhaps, of the business. I think my observations are sometimes a real lack of immersion in the business. So just kind of basic errors about what the company is, what it does, you know, lack of reading of the brief. And often ideas that either, you know, just aren't, they're quite blue sky, they're difficult to implement, they're not sort of clear where the PR value is going to be. And I think that's the issue for me, is that, you know, you're early on in those discussions and you've kind of then got to go through an hour and a half or a 2 hour sort of process.
Sure.
Sort of knowing that from the outset.
Okay. Now James, you mentioned before that you came from a pitch today in Wakefield and you're glowing and you said it was very good. Can you tell us which client that was with and how the pitch process went?
I can't tell you which client it was, but it went brilliantly. It went brilliantly because there weren't any other agencies on the pitch list, and the pitch lists are the best pitches are the ones where there isn't really a pitch. And we'd been recommended at board level from a current client that we're working for to another board. And all the right people in the room, the CFO was there, the CMO was there, the whole comms team, everybody was aligned about what the company needed to do. And a speedy decision is expected. So it was fantastic.
How did you get invited to that pitch? You mentioned before that it was a non-competitive pitch.
So a high-level recommendation from an existing client on their board level to another board director on that client. So, as always, in the game, word of mouth. And a word of mouth personal recommendation is always the best recommendation. And so, yeah, that was a happy pitch experience.
Mm-hmm. Mandy, what about you? What's the best pitch that you can recall being in? What did it provide agencies?
Well, like James, we've had a few pitch wins where we've been kind of the only one really in the mix through various contacts, word of mouth. Most of our pitches come through word of mouth, I would say, and through people who've worked with us before, which is always great. We've had a couple of really good pitch processes recently. I think one stands out particularly because it was speedy. There was two agencies, so the client had really done their research before picking the agencies they wanted to pitch. So we did a chemistry and a quick creds, but there was only two. There was three, and eventually there was just two agencies that pitched. They spent time briefing us. We really understood what they wanted, what they didn't want, what was going to work well, etc. And we pitched it. There was the right people in the room. There was the marketing director, etc. People at the right level who knew what the whole business was looking for. And we won it.
Okay.
And fantastic. It was just smooth, easy, quick.
Mm-hmm. Very painless.
Yeah, respectful, etc. Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Tanya? What's the best pitch process that you've been involved in, either on client side or agency side?
Well, probably, I mean, just in recent memory, we were going into a new market recently. We went in, we were meeting two agencies. One of the agencies was spot on. And in fact, we'd asked both agencies as part of the pitch process, because we were completely new to the market, to maybe introduce us to one or two journalists that they worked with. In the case of this particular agency, not only did we feel great chemistry with the team, the actual presentation, the content, the strategy, the ideas was spot on, but we ended up spending the better part of a day with them, shuttling around this rather large city, meeting reporters, which they laid on for us. And it gave us an opportunity to get to know the team really well and also see them in action, mm-hmm. you know, get the measure of the relationships they had, because the media relations part of this was particularly important for us. So that was a great, you know, experience. And as a result, you know, we appointed them as an agency.
Okay, fantastic. So good and bad. But let's be honest here. A lot of agency bosses do moan about pitching. It's a bit of a bugbear, and a lot tell me that the process is not fit for purpose. I don't know if you guys are aware of a story, but in Manchester recently, apparently an agency called Mason Williams won a pitch that featured 16 agencies. It was for a London restaurant, and the winning agency had to pitch 3 times before winning this business, or at least that's what we're told. Claire Mason at Man Bites Dog wants to kill the pitching process. Ketchum's Joanne Robertson wants serious reform, complaining about the time, drain and resources and number of agencies often involved. Mandy, you've been involved in quite a bit of pitching lately, and you turned down quite a lot. What would be really useful for our listeners, and I'll get the other panellists' views, is just describe the typical pitch process in 2019 and how this might have changed over time.
Well, it depends on the scale of the brand. Mm-hmm. So we've had a couple of instances with big brands that have contacted us where there's been 8 agencies that they've asked to write full pitches for without meeting them and just sending through pitch decks, which is, to me, flawed, totally flawed and totally pointless for 7 at least of those agencies. But a more kind of standard process would be come in and meet us for chemistry or creds. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they give you one kind of challenge, which will just kind of give them an indication of your thinking or creativity, which I think is fine. From that, they will then whittle it down to say, well, this is the ideal, three agencies. Any more than that, I think it's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And from that, you will then go and pitch and present some ideas. But I think the key is having the right people in the room and giving... I mean, I've got about 5 golden rules for pitching if I was to, like, be able to...
What are they? Okay. Give us your 5 golden rules.
I think the first one is about research. Mm-hmm. It's about asking clients to research the agencies before they start those conversations, because otherwise you're going from the extreme to the ridiculous. You have such a broad range of agencies out there that I think clients just need to know what feels right from their research before they start engaging agencies. Because although there's so much time involved in pitching, time and money and resource, that I think it has to be right. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is face-to-face time. Brief agencies face-to-face. Spend time explaining what you need. Give all the information. So some clients are always worried about telling agencies the budget of what they want to spend, and I don't understand that. And I will always push back and say, you know, you have to give us some idea of what you want to spend on your PR to mm-hmm. be able to gauge the ideas we then come back with. Otherwise, you know, you could be talking 5 grand to 500 grand. You need some level of guidance there. Time, give agencies time. Mm-hmm. That's the third one. It's about letting agencies come back with a proper response. You will never get a good pitch response in 3 days.
Is that standard, 3 days? Is that pretty average?
No, I'm being a bit dramatic. But sometimes clients, you know, you get a brief and we need a response on Monday. You get a brief on Monday and you need a response by Friday. Mm-hmm. And it's pointless, because to get a proper response for a proper pitch, you know, agencies have to understand that brand, the context, the background, the competitors. They've got to do the research and find, you know, the insight to be able to come up with something that will work. Otherwise, nothing's ever thought through. Mm-hmm. Properly. Decision makers, I've talked about having all the right decision makers in the room at the right time, because otherwise we've had this so many times. You've presented ideas to part of a team. Somebody might come in halfway through. You've got to re-present everything. Or you have half a team in a pitch, and then those people are then tasked to have to try and resell your ideas to other stakeholders within the business, which is really hard for them.
Just adds an extra layer.
That's an extra layer. And they're never going to be able to sell your ideas because... you know, it's third time down the road. And then I think the fifth one is just about respect. I think all good agency and client relationships start with kind of good mutual respect. And most of our most clients are great. I mean, I'm just being exaggerative in the bad here. But, you know, it's about having, you know, just respect, really. Giving agencies a glass of water in the room. I mean, we've been to pitches where we spoke for 2 hours and not one client has ever offered us a glass of water.
We even give you glasses of water at the PR show.
I mean, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Okay. Would you add anything to that, Tanya? What does an ideal pitch process look like in 2019? What does an average pitch process look like is probably a better way.
Well, I kind of agree, because, you know, I think keeping this sort of being very deliberate about who you invite to pitch and also keeping the field quite small. Because I think clients are investing time as well in the process. You know, you're kind of committed to kind of meeting with people, briefing people, you know, going through the sort of presentations, taking the deck away afterwards and sort of reviewing it, and then sitting down collectively to decide what meets your business objectives best. So I think it's in your own interests to actually kind of look at this in terms of very meaningful choices that you make along the way. I mean, I agree about respect as well. I think, you know, all the good relationships that we have and the best work that we do with our agency partners is built on a partnership and, you know, a partnership of trust. And a partnership where we feel like we can sort of share with them, you know, a detailed sort of insight into the challenges that we face that allows them to offer us credible and useful, you know, consultancy. So I would agree with most of what you say in that sense. And that tends to be the approach that we take when we go into market. We're not looking to have a massive field. We might ask for a selection of creds at the outset. And then we'll go through those quite deliberately, go back and ask for examples of work because we tend to know the sort of things we're looking for. And in fact, in some markets, in France, for example, we have two agencies rather than one because we knew we had a difficult brief for one agency to meet. But that's not the norm. It tends to be very much case by case on the market.
Do you find the processes are quite different depending on the market that you operate in or what the agencies need?
It does. It depends if the sort of businesses, you know, some of our businesses or business units in certain markets are much more mature than others. You know, the UK is a good example of a very mature part of our business. It was the second office that we set up. And also, I think the ecosystem here is much more sophisticated than some of the sort of other markets that we deal with internationally.
Would that mean that Snapchat would look for more sophisticated partners in some of those markets where you're not as well established?
It depends what's available in the market. Certainly, you're looking for a degree of understanding of how a business like ours operates, the understanding of, you know, what it means to be a US tech company and how that reflects into market. But you're also looking for that local understanding. So I don't think you want to impose, you know, or prejudge what the right agency looks like in a market. You want to understand the market, the culture, and then also sort of try to fit the two pieces together, that cultural understanding and local market relevance with, you know, understanding the dynamics of a US tech company.
Sure. James, anything else to add about what the current pitch process involves?
I think they've pretty much covered it.
Okay. Well, let's move the debate along to which parts of the pitch process are specifically broken. Where are the fault lines? Where are the major areas of tension and friction in your view?
I think it all starts with a great brief. And so often the brief is broken, and the reason it's broken is that it tends to be written by committee, and sometimes even the key decision maker isn't actually going to get what they want out of it. You can almost see where people have cut and pasted their own bits of the different stakeholders and the different departments into what they're trying to do, because hiring an agency is a big commitment, and therefore lots of voices in the whole marketing department want to put their 10 cents worth into it. And one of the first things that we do when we've got a brief is to say, do you mind if we try and boil this down? Can we try and get it onto a post-it note? Mm-hmm. And then can we play that back to you and just be 100% clear that this is the one thing we must do? And we know that you put 5 key messages in here, but really we can only tell one at a time because people have short attention spans and journalists are not very generous with how much they're going to say. So maybe 2 key messages, say, at best. And so To have a process which is collaborative in deconstructing what's required, I think it's really easy to go down a rabbit hole with 15 pages of you know, crowdsourced briefing at their end. So having permission to be able to do that is always a good start.
So with those pitch briefs that are actually really good and effective, do you find that they're generally owned by comms or other parts of the business? Is there generally one person who takes ownership of that, or how does it work?
I think it varies massively from client to client, and every brief looks radically different. You can tell when it's been owned by marketing because it will say, here's the strap line for our new TV commercial along the top, and therefore all ideas need to fall in under that, and it might not be anything that you could realise as a PR story.
So PR's try, an afterthought in those sorts of briefs.
Well, it's that whole trying to build matching luggage out of a marketing strap line that you still see all too often. Here's what we're going to be saying on our out-of-home and on TV, and therefore PR needs to say the same thing. Those are the worst, I'd say.
Okay. Mandy, for you, where are the major problems in the whole process?
I think James' point is totally key. I think the brief, it does need to start with a good brief. But I think it just goes down to finding the right agencies, and there's often too many in the mix. And I sometimes go into pitches and I feel that the client's never going to remember what we've said because they've already seen five agencies.
Yeah.
And you just feel it's almost like wasted, or there's two junior people in the pitch and not enough senior people in the pitch. And I think it's just about...
How junior does it get? I mean, what's some of the most junior people you've seen in that process?
Oh, we've had interns and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know...
They're well qualified.
I've never seen... I've never pitched to just an intern. But, you know, there's... And sometimes you just think, you know, are we on the same level in terms of the kind of thinking that we're going back with? Mm. That can be quite frustrating, I think. There's so many different things.
Okay. What about you now, Tanya? What's the areas of the process that you think don't currently work that well?
I thought it was really interesting, your point about collaboration. I'll just say from us, in terms of writing the brief, we're quite a small team, so we tend to not have a lot of different stakeholders weighing in on what we're writing. We tend to kind of do the work at the back end, if you like, in terms of speaking to the different teams, understanding the business objectives, incorporating that into the brief, and also working with marketing if we're trying to make sure that we've got sort of maximum impact for money that we're spending sort of above or through the line there. I think for me, it often comes across as just understanding our business. You know, I really know when somebody actually uses the product or not. Mm-hmm. And you would be surprised about the amount of people who will come into a pitch and not use the product. Mm. I think a bit pet peeve for me right now is really about influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because I think a lot of people come in with influencer campaigns presenting to us, not understanding our platform.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's a really different thing to come to Snapchat and present an influencer campaign than probably to, you know, any other brand. And so I see a lot of that, and that is a source of frustration. But to me, it boils down from either not using the product, not understanding the business, not having done the sort of requisite research.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably a pet peeve.
Okay. This nicely brings us into our next issue, which is procurement. I know James is a big fan, but does procurement play a huge role in Snapchat and the way that it sort of runs pitches?
Not for us. We're quite small. Bear in mind we're a sort of, you know, seven-ish year old company that's growing pretty quickly, and procurement isn't a big part of the process. That said, I think it will evolve. You know, mm-hmm. we went public just over a year ago. And I think as you kind of become a listed company, obviously there's governance issues that you need to sort of take into account. And I think there's that rigor that as you grow and as you develop, you know, is really important. Certainly sort of in prior roles, yes, procurement was a big part.
I was going to ask you about your experiences at Apple and what sort of role they might have played there.
But I think in large companies more generally, I think, yes, procurement is, you know, a figures large. But I agree that where procurement can play a really good role is in a level playing field, I guess, in terms of all suppliers,
mm-hmm.
and understanding what best practice looks like, making sure that you're getting the best deal, if you like, and in negotiation. But they shouldn't be setting, you know, which agency you choose, because it isn't a commodity. And, you know, and it should always be down to the comms team to decide who is the best fit, who is the best, you know, agency to support you. And then you have to go through that procurement element in terms of, you know, refining what the contract looks like.
Yeah, because there is that risk, isn't there, when you sort of commoditize things too much and it becomes all about cost rather than value.
Absolutely.
What's been your experience, Mandy, in terms of the role of procurement in the past and how that might be evolving?
Really varied. We've had a couple of quite big wins recently, and both have procurement involvement all the way through. I think procurement and marketing just have to work together. I think that's the key thing, is what Tanya's saying. You can't have a procurement team telling a marketing team what agency to pick, because you're never going to get the best agency for a job based on cost. It's just, and I always think that there's much of a muchness when it comes to agency costs, obviously depending on size and scale. And I totally understand that, you know, big companies need procurement to manage costs and feel like they're getting a deal and getting value. I kind of understand and accept that. And I think most agencies will try and offer some form of value. I think problems arise when I think agencies feel that procurement's being unreasonable, whether it's payment terms or pushing for discounts that make it very uncomfortable for the agency. And also, I've noticed that a lot of procurement negotiations are happening before you've even known whether you've won the pitch, which is hours of time. And, you know, we've been through a pitch recently. We won it, luckily. But I felt so bad for the other agencies, because I know how much negotiation and time has gone on behind the scenes with them and the procurement. And they haven't got anything out of it, you know. And I it's difficult, because obviously procurement needs agencies on board that can, they can work with for various kind of needs that they have. But I think there has to be a simpler way.
Yeah. Well, what about you, James? I know how much you're a fan of procurement. You've made that, your views quite public. How involved are procurement in pitches these days? And what sort of role do you think they should play?
Well, it varies. I mean, in some of the bigger companies, they're very, very present from start to finish, and in other ones, less so. But I think the reason why it sort of gets me hot under the collar is that the process of choosing, the whole process of finding a good agency partner is about that relationship building and being able to have human contact and being able to talk to each other during that process. And procurement have made that quite a one-way process. And so typically it will start with, you're sent an Excel spreadsheet, about 300 pages of it, where you need to basically identify, put in loads and loads of key skills and loads of case studies and loads of stuff, which you know that in that form as a spreadsheet will absolutely not be read by the client. It is unreadable. And therefore, all they have done is they've fulfilled an exercise in having that form put in a filing cabinet, and it will never be read again. But from an agency side, small agency like us, you're talking about 20, 30 hours of you know, my FD's time, of our COO's time to be able to get that right. And it sort of starts from there, really. And then, you know, the other things that have already been mentioned, somebody in procurement decided that you need to see five or six agencies. It's far, far too many. Three is the sweet spot number. I think more than three, we would be asking ourselves whether or not we wanted to go ahead on the day. If you're the fourth or fifth agency through the door, the client is going to be absolutely jaded to pieces by the time you get in there. From an agency side, you can feel that lack of excitement in the room. And I think that is the problem, is the fact that they're trying to sort of eliminate a human contact in the process. So that ability to be able just to ring up, have a chat, to be able to talk about something, to pop in and run something by somebody, that has sort of been taken out, because in some way that is deemed to be unfair, an unfair advantage. It's not an unfair advantage. How can you possibly do the right work without being able to ask the right questions? And on the commercials, I mean, I think this has happened a lot to us. The worst example, I think, happened in February. Before we were even given the brief, we were asked to negotiate or show what our discount on our rate card would be. Before we've even put the ideas to the table, and that is the equivalent of trying to buy a photocopier paper. Yeah. That's ridiculous. And ultimately, I think that if procurement really cared about making the pitch process fairer and better, they would call you up afterwards and they'll go, what do you think of our pitch process? Now, I have done hundreds of pitches. That has never, ever happened. And if I was in charge of best practice of procurement at Big Company Limited, I would want to make sure that our pitch process is really, really good and that I'm getting the best work out of clients. So, I mean, I don't know how it's ended up going down this route. But like I said, in some places it's worse than others. But I don't think the clients are going to get the best responses from agencies if they carry on being this sort of box-ticking exercise.
Is procurement commoditising PR and comm services? Is that a fair comment?
I would say they often do. I mean, in companies where marketing is highly valued and part of their DNA, like in companies like Diageo, for example, they have 20 or 30 brands, right? Then a procurement department plays an absolutely invaluable role to be able to match the skill set of an agency that maybe understands dance music or Snapchat from somebody that will understand how to do a high-end whiskey experience and leverage, you know, super quality deluxe brands at a premium level. So a procurement department there is absolutely invaluable for companies like that. But I think that it does get commoditized, and I think that procurement's role, definitely, that I don't want to be arguing my rate card with the client directly. I'd much rather talk to procurement about that and have a sensible commercial conversation where it doesn't feel that I need to talk about money. Well, it's actually not me that talks about money in our agency anyway. I'm not allowed to because I always do terrible deals. So somebody else does that. But
I'm sure all the procurement people out there will be taking notes. Negotiate with James.
I have to stop you there. I'm not allowed to discuss that. That is well below my above my pay grade.
What's your view on this, Mandy? In terms of commoditization of PR?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It just depends on the brands, though. I think it's really varied across the board, really. But we did see a brief recently that came through where I think it said the agency, one of the key factors in choosing our right agency will be based on cost and via the procurement, straight up. And we just said, no, not doing it. Just didn't pitch it.
Because I imagine in some processes you'd find out pretty early on what it's really about.
Well, the point is that if you're in a field of five agencies pitching and you know that somebody could undercut you and it would be the slight difference between a 10% cost saving and a better idea, it's like, why would you do that? And it also means that you're questioning whether or not the organisation really recognises the value of what PR can do in terms of brand building and how much that does in terms of the long-term revenues and fortunes of a company. If you're going to cheapen the service, then in the long run, that's probably, you know, a red flag.
Do you think that, though, that is partly the industry's fault, that you have agencies out there that are willing to sort of lowball and undercut?
Definitely. The big, giant agencies are able to do that far more because they are about scale. The big supertanker agencies, I would say, are able to go in and steal and steal a deal like that because it's all about scale.
Okay. We don't have any big super tanker agencies to defend themselves on this particular podcast, but we do have Tanya. Tanya, what do you think about, I mean, you mentioned that you don't currently have a huge involvement with procurement, but you have in the past. What is your view about procurement and the role they play in perhaps commoditising PR and comms?
I would agree that I would always sort of like push back against that. You know, if you had a procurement team that is trying to sort of distill it down to a question of cost, then I think, you know, it's up to the comms team to push back on that internally and say, you know, that's not the primary, you know, basis on which we're making this selection. You know, we're looking for a strategic partner, and the sort of all the things that we've been talking up until now, the relationship, the understanding of the business, the kind of creative thinking, the strategic nous, these are all things that we value more than we do the kind of lowest price. So I've not personally been in a situation where I've seen procurement push it that far. I mean, I've certainly been in conversations where, you know, you've had a robust discussion about sort of some of the selection criteria. But I think mostly I've worked with procurement teams who are willing to listen and willing to kind of, you know, approach it collaboratively and kind of support where the support is needed and to call out where they think terms, you know, are unnecessary or are not aligned to what we're trying to do as a business or to other sort of, you know, suppliers that we have. But generally, I think it's a two-way kind of collaboration to kind of get a deal that works, you know, both in terms of the relationship and the business objectives you're trying to solve for, and in terms of actually kind of consistency across the board about the relationships and partnerships that you have.
But what about the role of pitch consultants, the people who help agencies and never use them? Okay. Yeah. James?
I've never used them.
I've never won a pitch when a pitch consultant's been involved.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they often involved in pitches?
There's probably been three or four occasions this year, I would say, where there's been a pitch consultant, and I either haven't bothered to pitch it or we've had a few chats and then kind of it's not been right. I think they work well when there's big agencies, and there's lots of big agencies. I think they don't work so well when there's a range of different agencies, if you know what I mean, because I think it's too broad. And it starts that whole thing of there being 15 agencies and everyone has to send in their staff, and it just gets a bit...
Oh, so, sorry, well, I think when you say a pitch consultant, do you mean one of these agencies that manages the pitch on behalf of the client?
That's right, yes.
Okay, fine, sorry. So, yeah, I've done one of those. And I think for the same reasons that I'm not a massive fan of the way that procurement puts up a brick wall between you and the client, it is another layer.
Yeah,
and
right.
It just, you again, I think they, in that one experience that I did have, I remember it was fairly typical of how procurement would run it, where they say, please send us any questions that you have for this against the brief. And all agencies submit their questions and all agencies will have them all fired back at them on the same thing. So there's no opportunity to sort of, you know, get stuck into a particular insight around a problem. So I think
it's just having another person in between agency and client makes it difficult, because I think the best pitches and the best relationships are when there's a connection between the two, because just sitting in a room and having a chat with someone, you can instinctively feel what they want, even if they don't use the words. So sometimes it's like, I find a lot of the time it's reading between the lines of a brief or understanding from nuances of things they've said that you get a much better feel for what it is that they want. And then you end up winning that pitch because you've been there, you've met them, you know from your gut. And you can't, you know, you can't have gut written on a scorecard. You know, they also have procurement also in scorecards and all this kind of stuff when you're on pitches. And often I've seen scorecards, change the subject a bit, which don't relate to the pitch at all. So they've sent through a scorecard the night before we've gone to do the pitch, and we've looked at our pitch that we've just written, and we've looked at the brief, and we looked at the scorecard, and we're like, it's like three different things in it, you know, or two different things. The scorecard doesn't even match necessarily the brief. So then you start rewriting the pitch to fit the scorecard, and then it's just a total mess.
It's really easy for agencies to whinge about how it's all how unfair it all is and how difficult and broken it is. But ultimately, I think on the client side, it is just a huge headache for them as well. Huge headache.
Yeah.
Jockeying those number of agencies with all of their questions, the meeting time, the telephone time, the all of the stuff. I can completely see why people would use a third party person or would need to lean on procurement to try and help them. It's a massive undertaking.
Okay. Other areas or points of friction, one of the things I often hear from agencies is the cost involved and the resource involved in pitches. And there's a bit of debate about whether agencies should be paid to pitch. What are your views on this idea that agencies should be paid to pitch? Mandy?
I think it would be fabulous if agencies were paid to pitch, obviously. In fact, we have been paid to pitch quite a number of times, which has been great. I think when we've been on rosters and there's been, I don't know, say four agencies on that roster, and they've asked, they've got a particular brief and they've asked two of those agencies to pitch, and there are some clients that have paid both agencies to pitch for that because there's a set number of briefs and they want everyone to feel incentivised and motivated to give their best work. And it's not fortunes of money, but it does cover some of the agency's costs, and it does make the agency feel, okay, there's that mutual respect thing and they value our time. And, you know, if we don't win it, we haven't wasted thousands of pounds. We've wasted some thousands of pounds, but not all thousands of pounds, because you've been reimbursed. So there is something to be said for that. And I think, you know, I think that would be amazing if more clients did that.
James, you mentioned before that you do two pitches a week. I mean, surely being paid, that would be a huge money saver, wouldn't it not?
It would do. I mean, that would obviously be great. We have been paid for pitches in the past. But I don't think that is going to become widespread anytime soon in the agency world. The ad agency haven't managed to solve this one either. We ask really tough searching questions of ourselves when these briefs come in. So is this the right fit? You know, are they a bold, enlightened challenger brand which is the stable of brands that we want to represent? People who want to do things differently, people who want to shake things up, people who want to stand out within their category. If they don't have any evidence of having done that, then we really want to meet the person who is at the helm of that agency and hear personally from them about their vision, about why they're going to shake it up. Because a quick look on their social media feeds or a Google News search and you get a sense of where they are in terms of their appetite for risk and their appetite to want to do things. So we put in lots and lots of time to try and do the best possible sense check about whether or not this is the right client for us. And as a result, we have a much, much higher strike rate than we did 12 months ago, when perhaps, you just get drunk on the excitement of people going, hey, you want to pitch? And you just go and do it, and then you realise that you have burned hours and hours of time and for doing it.
Tanya, does Snapchat pay agencies to pitch? And is that something you would consider doing?
It's not something we do. I'm not saying that we wouldn't consider it. I mean,
how much? Come on, exclusive.
Exclusive here now.
10K per pitch.
Yeah. So I think what we try to do at the moment is see it as an investment on both sides. I think we try to keep the field really small. So I think we were talking before, we don't invite more than two or three into a pitch. We try to keep it a really narrow sort of brief. So while we'll try and give a lot of information about the broader business and the sort of challenges and the opportunities, we do ask maybe for a response to one or two problems. And mm-hmm. we just ask for one or two ideas on each of that. So we try not to kind of give a kind of, you know, a request for absolutely everything that means hours and hours of time. We try to give a decent amount of, you know, the insight and sort of background without the agency having to go out and find that for themselves. We try to make ourselves available for, you know, at the agency's convenience for further questions and time. So we're not on a timetable to do that. And we try to give adequate time. And we're quite flexible also about ways of responding. Some of our responses have been face-to-face. Some are, you know, VC-led. Some are sort of written to a problem. So I think we try to be respectful of the investment that agencies are making and make it proportionate to the investment that we're making.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, at the moment we're not paying for sort of pitch time, but we are trying to make sure that it's a very limited sort of well-constructed approach.
Have you worked at a company that previously that pays for agencies to pitch?
No.
Okay, fair enough. The other thing I wanted to touch base on as well is this idea of when agencies go into a pitch process, come with this fantastic idea, and then the client says, no, see you later, but then half a year later, lo and behold, that idea gets used. This happened, or allegedly happened recently, between Manifest and BrewDog, which they've amicably resolved, which is nice. I just wanted to ask some views about this and how prevalent it is and what can be done to better protect agencies' IP in the pitch process. Mandy?
It's a really tricky one. I think we've talked about this previously. It's very, very difficult to protect IP. I mean, we've had this happen to us a number of times. Mm. And you can go so far with it, and there'll always be something that's maybe slightly different between your idea that you pitched and then the new agency's idea that they somehow are activating.
Like a different designed can.
Yes, exactly. There'll be some slight change in nuance. Mm. I don't know the answer on this. I mean, sure, you do the same, James. Everyone puts, you know, IP protection, legal words at the mm-hmm. end of their pitches, etc. But unless you want to go to court, which most agencies don't want to do because it's a load of money, load of time, etc., agencies are quite vulnerable in this, I would say. And I don't know the answer. But
James, do you know the answer?
I mean, we've got quite a good mutual NDA, which sort of covers off both sides when you're exchanging ideas. I've only once had to go fully legal on somebody for stealing our ideas, and we were really successful, and we were well paid for it. That was really unfortunate. I think the hardest things to protect is that when you're going in to talk to a client about their brand problem or the mission that they're trying to achieve, is that very often the insight and the approach about how you're going to do it is really what unlocks the creative magic. So it's not necessarily the execution of a single creative idea, but it's more like, how would we approach this from a more of an insight-powered solution about where your problem lies? That sort of high-level thinking potentially can create a platform from which they can do a whole year's worth of work. Mm. And that is far harder to protect than saying, we will set fire to the Thames or whatever you want to do as an idea to launch Snapchat's new set fire feature or whatever you've got. So individual ideas, I think, relatively straightforward, but high-level thinking, harder.
Sure. Tanya, I can't imagine you've ever stolen anyone's IP before, but have you heard about this happening before, and what do you think agencies can do to better protect their IP?
I mean, these guys are going to have the better sense of really the sort of the tools to protect, but I, you know, absolutely not, having, you know, wouldn't take an idea. I mean, I think, you know, I think having worked agency side as well as having worked client side, I appreciate the sort of time and effort and thinking that goes in, not only at the sort of like high level strategic point of view, but also in terms of generating, you know, really creative thinking. You know, I do think agencies should be reimbursed. And I think, you know, if somebody wants to take an idea that they've seen in a pitch, if they've chosen another agency to run with because they feel that across the board that relationship is going to be stronger, but they really like an idea that they've seen, I think they should have an adult conversation with the agency in question and discuss the terms on which they could, you know, work with the other agency on that idea and what a fair remuneration would be. And it should be a, you know, an adult and civilized conversation about it rather than suddenly the idea popping up elsewhere. I do think the one thing I suppose that is difficult is that some agencies do come in with the same ideas. They are different, but they start from the same kernel. You know, so you'll sometimes see sort of similar thinking because the brief has led people down a similar line, and there will be...
Well, that's a perfect opportunity for procurement to step in and go, just to flag, we saw this idea. And that could, they could easily do that as a really helpful job.
Yeah, absolutely.
How much will you do this idea for?
Debating.
Okay. And before we move on to solutions, any other bugbears of the current process? I can see James looking at his long list.
I think that just the probably it's not very, it's not a very level playing field when it comes to the time that we have to respond to a brief versus how long it's going to take to actually hear about what the outcome is. And I appreciate that there's probably lots of committees and stuff on the other side, but it would be good to know that if we're going to work, if we're going to burn the midnight oil for a week to deliver a good solution, that when you say you'll be back to us on Friday, it will be this Friday and not Friday next month. I think that gives you a bit of confidence that, you know, we're on both sides, we're all putting in a lot of time.
Okay, let's move on to solutions, a final part of this podcast. Should pitching be ripped up? What are some other ideas in terms of how clients can choose agency partners? I'll start off with you, Tanya.
I was going to be interested to hear what these guys said first.
But, we can start with you, Mandy.
No, it's fine. Sure. What would I think instead of solutions? I mean, I just think it depends on what you're looking for and what the objective is. You know, sometimes it can be an existing relationship that you already have the sort of inherent knowledge about the company, you have the relationship, and then you feel that that can transfer into a slightly different role and providing support in a slightly different area of the business. And that might not need to be open to sort of a competitive pitch. That might be just be a ongoing conversation and ideation with a particular existing partner. You might have a very discreet piece of work, and again you might be able to do that not through a pitch but through conversations and meetings, and you might be able to kind of eliminate the need to sort of have a formal process behind that. But I think if you're looking for a partner that you're going to be working with on an ongoing basis over the course of a year, you know, the pitch continues to be a pretty good way to do that. But I think, as we've all kind of discussed here, it comes down to respect and an understanding of what's, you know, what the investment is on both sides and that commitment from both sides. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to be working together, you know, you want to start that off on a positive footing. You don't want it to be, you know, on the back of resentment on either side over something in the process.
Okay. Mandy, what ideas do you have about how the process can be improved or if we need a new process?
I think the process we have could be simplified. I think at the moment there's a number of kind of layers to a big pitch. There's normally at least three stages, sometimes more, and they can go on for weeks. When we've just one started in February, I believe. You know, that's a long time to be going through the pitch process. I wonder whether, you know, a pitch process, which is all about a connection of people, as we've discussed, is a chemistry session over a coffee, an informal chemistry session where both parties talk about their needs and, you know, what the agency can do to potentially help. There's a challenge involved potentially. And from that, you should really have a pretty good idea of whether that agency is going to be right for that job. It might be that you need one more stage, but if you could do it in kind of a one or two stage process, to me that immediately cuts out hours of time. But that involves, I suppose, the client really researching the agencies that they're bringing on board at the very beginning, so there's not so much wastage and, you know, it's keeping it quite small.
So trimming a lot of the fat out of the process, basically.
I think you could trim a lot of the fat out of the pitch process, definitely.
James?
I think collaboration is the key word for me, which has already been said. But I think that a tight brief can sometimes constrain what an agency could bring to the table in terms of sort of bigger strategic thinking. And I know that design agencies, for example, very often do what they call chemistry pitches, where a client will pretty much make their decision on who they're going to work with after having had one of these chemistry meetings. So the idea is that you could work from there collaboratively to co-develop the overall scope of the work and the big idea together. Yeah. There is so much amazing talent on the client side, which very often is kept out of the room or out of the discussion in terms of making an idea bigger and better. But the onus on the agency to come in with a perfect solution, it feels like ridiculous if you haven't been able to spend that time properly building it. So, you know, you could, you know, clients could trial, you know, new agencies by having a smaller roster of people that they're working on smaller briefs with paid work almost from the get-go and doing a series of smaller creative sprints to see what they could do together. But I think that this idea of the fact that the agency are going to be the solution to all of your worries and woes and have all of the best ideas and all of the best media contacts and all of the best insights is a nonsense. You have to move towards a position where we're working far more collaboratively. But, you know, to the earlier point, the pitch is there as a creative test which shows thinking and execution ideas and creativity. Probably we're not going to move much past that, but it is really only a test.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Tanya, Mandy and James, for taking part. PR Week is going to continue this conversation. We're actually planning to have another podcast where we speak to people from procurement and we speak to pitch consultants. So please
can
make
I come?
Sure.
Yeah, you'll have to be a fly on the wall for that one.
Absolutely.
I'm on holiday that week.
Please make sure you stay tuned and join us for that. I'd also like to thank our production partners, Marketeers, for putting together this podcast. I'm Arvin Hickman. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the PR Show podcast with Arvin Hickman. Brought to you by PR Week. If you like what you heard, please leave us a nice review.